Oh, come on. What do you mean we're all video? We're killing ourselves out here, and you have to be ready.
So we play mood music.
I'm not working this way again, ever. This is absolutely horrible.
Hello, I'm John Waters, and I'm supposed to announce there is no smoking in this theater, which I think is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard of in my life.
Herodin.
Snowden.
Rodan.
Rodan. Rodan.
Ronan.
Buck Owens.
Buck Owens.
I'm running the track.
Bop, bop, bop.
Nickelodeon. Bloody. Chode Factory. Chode Factory. You can fact me in the Chode Factory. Chode Factory.
Choke Factory?
Chode Factory.
Children Factory.
Children.
It's gross.
Factory. Gross. Gross.
Does Jeffy need to come clean it up for you?
Come clean it up now.
Children's Flactory.
The Flactory. Don't stuck a sticky, stooky, stook. Don't stoop.
I hide my phylactery. Don't laugh at me.
Provolactic.
What'd you do to that?
I didn't do anything to it.
You just noticed it was messy. Jeez.
Yeah,
jeez. It's like he who spilled it willed it. That's not how it works.
Who spilled it willed it.
Thou who hast smelteth it hath dealt with it. Yeah. Who articulated it? Articulated it.
What else floats on water?
Parts.
Little rocks.
Some very tiny rocks.
Very tiny rocks. a duck!
Precisely.
Precisely.
So.
Shall we begin?
Yes.
Welcome to the Cinema Underground.
Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, with myself, Pat Corrigan, and
Jeff Brandon.
And
that guy.
Andy.
That's Andy.
I'm the other guy, Mark.
Mark, the other one.
The other.
We should all just like point at each other and say, "This is Pat." No, we can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that though. It just won't be. It will not be seen on the art or audio.
Right, but that's the
on the rodeo.
That's
so okay. Yeah. So we're talking about film noir this time. That's the new topic. Film noir. It's a great genre. It's a lot of taken a lot from German expressionism with the use of shadow and the minimal light and black and white film, even when Technicolor was available in Hollywood. And it's also a following up that period of Hollywood where crime films were becoming very popular. Like, you got your early films like Scarface and Maltese Falcon, and then you have a kind of B-picture move in on the side after all that happened, and they're saying, well, we're going to take that and make it darker, and we were going to call it film noir. And I don't think anybody called it film noir at first. I think the deal was it had happened, and then the French saw it, and as usual, the French were like, this is art, because they get to decide what's art.
Right. It's film noir d'Americana or something.
Yeah, some Frenchy Bologna. But yeah, exactly. It's one of those deals. It was a retroactive title given to these films. Generally a lot of some A pictures, some B pictures, some back and forth. You got a lot of big-time writers working on these, which I don't know how popular that was prior to film noir, but you got a lot of guys like Hemingway is getting involved. He wrote what did Hemingway write again? God damn it. If I don't write things down, it's hard for me to remember them. I can remember them in polite conversation, but I can't remember them when I need to know them. So I'm just going to try and remember. What was that one with him? It was something obvious.
Noir.
Ernest Hemingway. What did he write? It's one of the more popular, obvious ones. No, not the Killers. That's why I was getting confused. Cause I was going to say The Killing, which is Stanley Kubrick's first film. Which is a film noir as well, which is Stanley Kubrick's first really, really great movie.
Really?
Yeah. The Killing, if you haven't seen The Killing, it's excellent.
What year was that made?
The Killing or The Killers? The Killing is what you're asking about, right?
Yeah, Stanley Kubrick.
Yes, The Killing was made
Now there's a show called The Killing, which is what's coming up. Let's type in Stanley Kubrick, which I don't know how they might be somehow related. We're just banking off of the how good this film was. The Killing was made in 1956. So yeah, it was really early. There's a lot of great anecdotes about Kubrick in this movie. I don't know who the cinematographer, he was new, so he's a kid. And the cinematographer, basically they had a little incident. And the very first shot in the movie is this long tracking shot where it looks really cool because they have it so the walls are cut out, so it's kind of looking between rooms. So you see the seams in the walls, like it's kind of like an effect. So they set it up so it would kind of come in around those walls and then come up to the gangsters as they're planning their thing. So Kubrick set up the track like that. And then the cinematographer came in and like took the track apart, and then he was like, oh, it's gonna be much better this way. And Stanley was like, why'd you move my track? He's like, it'll look much better this way. He's like, okay, well, what about the change in perspective? He didn't want to do the change in perspective, and Stanley Kubrick figured out what he was up to and told him to either set the track up how he had it or get the fuck off his picture.
Typical Kubrick.
So that was it's typical, but that's Kubrick's first moment in the big time, and the first thing he did was give somebody a bunch of shit, which he would become known for throughout his career, and was right, as he often is, because he's there's all types of rumors with Kubrick, like he has an IQ of 200, which maybe, I mean, I'm sure the guy has a very high IQ. I wouldn't doubt that.
That's possible.
Publicly, he has said that he actually has a lower than average IQ, so I don't know where the whole IQ of 200 thing actually came from. It's pretty much commonly mentioned when talking about Kubrick, but he does not back that up. But yeah, he's an intelligent guy. I mean, think about like The Shining, the intricacy of The Shining. Certainly can. I mean, but the movies we're talking about today, so you got Sunset Boulevard, 1950, Billy Wilder, Strangers on a Train, 1951, Hitchcock. Of course, you can't talk about film noir without Hitchcock. He's the suspense master.
And the creepiness master.
And Billy Wilder, too, is a great, excellent director, great director of film noirs and comedies. He did Double Indemnity. And other stuff, too. He's just a really cool guy. Billy Wilder. And these are some of the guys when we did our French New Wave episode. We talked about the guys they were worshiping in Hollywood that was they were talking about in Cahiers du Cinéma, and these were two of those guys, Billy Wilder and Alfred Hitchcock. So, which movie would y'all like to talk about first?
We could do Strangers.
Strangers. On a Train.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah. Okay, sure.
Strangers
on, I mean, it's on a Train. Hitchcock. Strangers on a Train.
We save the best for last.
Save the best for last. So you're of the opinion that Sunset Boulevard is the best?
Yes.
Okay.
Really?
I would agree. I like it better, yes.
I liked Strangers better.
Wow.
That's weird.
I think...
It's highly unusual.
I don't think so.
I don't think it is. Although I do enjoy Sunset Boulevard more, I could see how someone might... If not prefer it, then say that it was a better film. Because
I'm not saying it's a better film.
I think Sunset Boulevard is one of the best films I've ever seen.
Sunset Boulevard is amazing, but there's a few things that might turn people off. And we don't have to do it in any particular order. So I'll just say it. Like the overdub or the narration. That too, a modern viewer, that seems really weird. Because it was super common back then. But I mean, eventually they figured out like, you know, people don't need to be told what's going on. They can just see what's going on.
But it's cool because he's telling you after he's already dead.
Yeah, right.
So that's kind of cool.
Right. There's a number of interesting choices in Sunset Boulevard.
I feel like it could have been like half an hour shorter.
Sunset Boulevard felt was a little too long.
Yeah. I thought it was perfect.
I know. I love that movie, and I love the way it plays
there was,
out.
That was great. I wouldn't take anything out of that.
The third person narrative, it's sort of assuming that your audience are idiots, and that's why
I think it's an interesting choice in this movie because they're talking about the silent era, and she keeps saying words. People need things explained to them now, and blah blah blah, and like we used to do
that
it with our faces,
true.
And they're not in this movie. They're going a step further and just feeding you this story. But again, he's also this like kind of unreliable narrator. That's probably too far because she's pretty straight up, this guy, even about his own faults. So. But he leaves things to the imagination. He leaves things out. I mean, obviously, he's dead right when they start the movie, so that's very interesting. But Strangers on a Train is a little more modern or typical to me in some ways. But good. I mean, definitely good. Have any of you guys ever seen Throw Mama from the Train?
Nope.
No.
You've never seen Throw Mama from the Train?
I've heard of it before.
It's a movie written and directed by Danny DeVito, starring Danny DeVito and Billy Crystal. And the plot of the movie is that there's a writer at night school, or he teaches writing, and his wife stole his book, and she published it after they got divorced. So she's making millions of dollars. He still has to work as a teacher. And he has this weirdo in his class who's played by Danny DeVito, who's like a total like Asperger's-y type person. And he hates his mom. So he goes off one day, and he sees strangers on a train. And like doesn't pay attention to at all to how it plays out. He just likes the idea
of a crisscross.
Right. He likes the idea of the crisscross.
We'll swap murders.
And it goes down pretty much exactly the same way. Danny DeVito's like, we'll swap murders. I'll kill your wife. You kill my mom. And Danny DeVito approaches her while she's like leaning over on a cruise ship to get her earring off the ledge. She falls and dies herself. But he just claims that he did it. So Billy Crystal will kill his mom. And then Billy Crystal comes over and he calls him his uncle something. He's like, yeah, it's weird. And he's like, she's really old. You don't even really have to kill her. You can just startle her a little bit. Just talk with your hands. Move. Talk loudly. So he's like, yeah, it's a fucking hilarious movie. Throw Mama from the Train. Gotta love it.
Throw Mama off the boat.
Throw Mama off the boat train.
Strangers on a Train. It's centers around a tennis player.
Right.
Guy,
correct.
Guy.
I like their names.
Haynes.
He's no Fedorov, but...
He's not a professional. He's not even professional.
He's not even professional. What's the deal with this guy?
Right.
What's his deal? What's he doing schmoozing with the upper crust? Like?
He's just like raking it in the amateur circuit.
Okay. Because he's like dating a senator?
He's dating a senator's daughter.
Right.
He has a wife who is a fucking
bit
skank.
Of a whore. Yeah. Bit of a whore.
Skank. She's the type of girl that I'd like to hang out with.
She's
fun.
Yeah. She's morally loose.
Uh-huh. She seems fun.
Yeah. Morally lenient, I don't remember.
So this guy, oh God, what's the other guy's name?
Bruno?
Bruno.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
So Bruno is just like, he reads a lot, and he might be a little Asperger-y.
He's a little sociopathic.
He's certainly on the spectrum.
He's a sociopath. Yeah. He's not. I mean, he's very clever in the way he acts. He's not Asperger-y. Asperger-y. If you're Asperger-y, you're not clever when you're interacting with people. You're flat affect, and people are like,
"What's your deal?
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with this guy?
Yeah,
clearly something's up here.
That guy, people are like, "What's wrong with you?" But it takes a little while because you're like,
"Yeah,
I'm scared of you."
He's more of like a Ted Bundy character. Like, he's very charming initially, and then when he's like choking you at a party,
then you're like, "Hey, I think something's up here."
And everyone's like, "That was weird."
So he just like reads a lot, and he sees our buddy Guy on the train, and he's like, "Hey, I know all about you. I've read about your wife and your girlfriend, and diarrhea of the mouth starts talking about like how he doesn't like his father because he's got lots of money, but he doesn't
give
think
him
he
enough.
Does shit." And he's like, "Well, hey, how about this? How about we swap murders?"
Yeah, I do love that one point where he's like explaining what his dad is like, and he thinks I should have to work a job and like pay my own way, and he's like, "What do you think?" And the guy's he cuts him right off, and he's like, "Yes, I hate him too." And the guy's obviously about to be like, "That sounds reasonable to me." Like,
yeah, that whole thing, it's just like, you know, humoring him. It's like, "Yeah, oh, all right, man, all right, you're gonna buy me dinner? No, don't worry about it. I'm just gonna go to the dining car. Is there any seats in the dining car? Not for 20 minutes."
Right.
It's like
he got stuck.
It's curious to know how much is actually planned on the part of Bruno, because it's set up so nicely, like how far advanced he thought of all of this. Like, I mean, he picked him out, Haynes, ahead of time, but was he on the train for the sole purpose of, it seemed like, because he knows who Haynes is. I can't prove that.
Just because
he's
weird and fucking like reads the papers and shit. He's like, "Oh, I know exactly who you are. He's into tennis."
Right, so maybe, one angle is that like he could have, but he's obviously had the crisscross murder on his mind for a while. Let's swap murders.
And he's thought of it before. But he's thought of a lot of murders before. That's true. In a lot of different ways to murder people.
He's a sociopath.
Right. That's true. So sociopaths can be really quick and take advantage of situations on the spot. So
yeah,
he easily could have.
Which this guy did. He was like, oh, you left the lighter there. I'm going to take that.
Mm-hmm.
So he was thinking.
He was like, oh, I should give this back. No, I'll keep this. And it wasn't like he was like, I'll keep this to frame him. He's just like, I'll just keep this because it's nice.
Yeah, so he's a sociopath. The kind of guy who would just steal something for no reason. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. A to G.
A to the motherfucking G, homeboy.
So yeah, he sees the lighter and it says A to G on it. He's like, oh, this is from Ann Morton.
Yeah.
The senator's daughter that you're dating.
That's what's so interesting to me, though, that he puts together that the guy might want his wife killed, that he knows that the divorce thing, well, that's probably in the paper, that is in the paper, is that he wants a divorce, but the wife won't give it to him.
Well, I don't think that was in the paper.
I don't think it was in the paper. I think he inferred that.
Well,
and then the guy
he
like,
pried that out of him, I'm pretty sure.
Well, no, he mentioned it first, and then the guy was like, oh, you know about that or something.
Yeah. Because his wife initially wanted a divorce.
He knew he was seeing Ann Morton.
Right.
Because that's in the
paper. That's in the paper, yeah.
And he also knew that he had a wife still, because that was also in the papers. So he just kind of like put it all together. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Were you gonna stop
in your hometown? Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, because he said he mentioned he was stopping in Metcalf. Yeah.
Right.
Whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So then, I mean, that would be pretty obvious at that point. It's like, okay, you're going to see your wife.
Yeah. Right. Because Haynes never says outright that he wants him to kill his wife.
No,
that's
not
the
at
thing.
All.
Right?
But he does say to himself on the phone to Ann Morton that he would strangle.
He could strangle her.
That was after he
The exact same scene happens in Throw Mama from the Train, except he yells in a crowded cafeteria at the college. He's like, I hate her. I wish she was dead. And then like the cops say, during the interview, one of the women in his class is like, he said, I hate her. Wish she was dead. That's the same woman who would write things like his brains ooze nice, like a nice melted. He was like reading it back to her. He's like, you don't see anything wrong with that sentence. She's like, it's great. His brains ooze nice,
so
like a nice
like
melted.
In this time period, like, you could say that kind of shit. You could say that. But like nowadays, it's like, oh, I could fucking kill this person. I want to, like, wrap my hands around their neck and, like,
people,
that's going a little too far.
People
and
are liable to take you literally and go overboard, for sure.
But your phone conversations also weren't being recorded 24/7.
Not like now.
Right.
That's the other thing.
Mm-hmm. One of our 15 listeners is an FBI, I bet.
No.
Gotta be.
Yeah, they gotta be on everything.
No way.
We're too busy with
4chan.
A modified anarchy symbol as our symbol.
And that's true.
Well, it's just metadata.
What?
Metadata now.
Metadata?
Metadata.
Metadata?
Metadata.
Metadata.
Metadata. Metadata. Okay.
Metadata.
Metadata.
Metadata. So, yeah, there were a couple inconsistencies. Definitely plot inconsistencies with this movie.
Why wouldn't she just fucking go to the police as soon as she died and be like, oh, this dude said he was going to kill my wife.
Mm-hmm. And he said he's going to blackmail me. But then again,
it'd be very difficult. I could see how it would be difficult to explain this to police. Especially when dealing with the police, you basically just don't want to have to deal with the police ever, because they will, who knows what they'll do? Who knows what they'll get up to?
Right. At this time, they're a little questionable in their methods.
Right.
Well, I mean, with the dudes following him, like, they were tight with the dude that was following him.
Yeah, they were nice.
Like, as soon as he found out that he had his lighter still, he could just be like, yo, this is what's going on.
Right.
Here's the proof. He's got my fucking lighter.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the guy who played Bruno, I thought was Robert Vaughn the whole time, but it's
Walker.
Not. It's Walker. Yeah, it looks a lot like Robert Vaughn. Like from Pootie Tang. Starring Big Shorty, my boy. I forget all their names. Truckee and Robert Vaughn. But yeah, he looks a lot like Robert Vaughn.
Nobody else I recognize. That lower lip.
There's some other interesting. Obviously, wait, who wrote? Oh, Raymond Chandler was involved in the writing of this movie. He was one of the people involved in this group who I love, and you can credit a lot of where film noir came from, which is detective fiction, to Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett. Who apparently, the person who wrote the novel was a Patricia Highsmith, And they bought it from her for $7,500, which is kind of a lot for back then, but even by Hollywood standards, it wasn't very much. And the reason they were able to get away with it was because it was her first novel. And I think it says that they talked to Dashiell Hammett, so it's basically like Hammett and Chandler. They're the two guys. Chandler was the only one of them Chandler was the one who went to Hollywood and started making his money that way later, but Dashiell Hammett was another original hard-boiled detective author. So it says, with the treatment Hitchcock had shopped for a screenwriter, he wanted a name writer to lend some prestige. That's probably how he ended up with Raymond Chandler, but was turned down by 8 writers. These included John Steinbeck, Thornton Wilder, and he talked with Dashiell Hammett, and that went a little ways, but ultimately I don't think Dashiell Hammett, he didn't take it. But Raymond Chandler did, and also Raymond Chandler would work later with Wilder on Double Indemnity, which is a great noir picture. It's about like insurance salesmen. It's like basically insurance salesmen. An element to it, they have claims investigators, so it kind of takes the detective thing and puts it on a claim investigator, and then there's an insurance salesman who tries to orchestrate. What the fuck am I talking about?
Raymond Chandler, yeah, he did work on this. I feel like I mixed it up. Billy Wilder didn't direct this, though. This is Hitchcock.
But, right. So I think I threw that name out there. Oh, okay. So Hitchcock talked with Billy Wilder while making this movie because of Billy Wilder having written Double Indemnity with Chandler. That's the ticket. Okay. So it looks like Hitchcock actually is going in. He's trying to make this a film noir. He's trying to talk to the usual suspects of film noir, Hammett, Chandler, Wilder, to try and get a feel of how he's going to do it. Which makes sense, but, I mean, in another sense it kind of doesn't, because he's like, Hitchcock's the master of suspense. Like, if you've seen any of his early films, they're like great suspense pictures. They could be film noir if they had come out at the right time. Like one of his English movies. Like there's this one English movie I saw that he did about like a little kid carrying a bomb that he doesn't know is a bomb. So the whole movie you're like, oh shit, I hope this kid doesn't blow up. It was really good. I don't remember what it was called, but it was among like 50 movies he made over the course of like 10 years in England.
Wow, that one sounds
back when you can do that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
yeah, but there were definitely some weird plot inconsistencies, like how. Like, we didn't really know how he knew so much about Guy. Bruno knew about Guy. Well,
he's like a playboy, yeah. Yeah. He was in the newspaper. He was in the newspaper.
Right. There was a phone call partway through the movie where Guy called him, apparently for no reason.
So the
phone call, though, was just, that was just weird. That wasn't even plot inconsistency because it didn't make any sense at all. Because it wasn't like, so then the other one we were talking about was when they knew he was going to Penn Station.
Right.
And then that he was going to Metcalf. But even though it was like a non-existent car chase. So that didn't make any sense.
It was towards the end.
Yeah.
He had his girl, right. He had his girl set up like a
cab.
Taxi waiting for him, and he had her sister like distract the
give the guy a blowjob basically.
Or an eye job,
Powder off his junk.
Yeah, that one. But then they're like, they go out there, he's like, where'd he go? Then they're like, okay, we gotta go to Penn Station. But it's like, how'd they know that?
Yeah. Kind of assumed he was going there.
Yeah. But then the phone call, though, that just didn't make any sense, because it was like earlier on in the movie. So, who called who?
Guy called Bruno.
Oh, right.
You mean when he was...
Oh, yeah.
When he called him to say, hey, I'm going to go kill your father tonight?
No, be way before
way
that.
Way before
in
that.
The very beginning.
It was really the first... It's like the only time you saw his father. And it was at his house. Like the Bruno. Uh-huh. And then his father's like, I want to talk to you. And he's like, sorry, father, long distance.
Yeah, I remember that scene.
And then he picked up the phone, and then it was like,
that was weird.
He didn't really say anything.
Well, but when you call someone, you ask for someone, but then it was like he was asking, it didn't make any sense.
is it possible that Bruno had the butler make the call initially?
That's what I was thinking. That would be the only way that made sense.
I don't think I thought about it, but I think that's what I assumed.
Like
he had him on the line or something waiting.
Right.
Like the butler's like, oh, my master wants to speak to you.
My master.
Bruno, yes, master Bruno. Yeah, that would make sense, I guess, if that was the case. But they didn't explain that or anything. Because they just assume that's what people with ballers don't make phone calls, of course.
Right. Like, can you get this fucking guy, Haynes guy, this Tannis fucker on the line, please? And the guy does it. He's the butler. It's his job.
Right.
He knows how to pick through a phone book. Also, and
Bruno's such a classic rich boy. He's almost like...
Try the Morton's house.
A precursor to, like...
Justin Bieber.
No, I was going to say like the Menendez brothers or something.
Oh, okay,
you know?
Yep.
But, you know, any...
I mean, sort of like any young pop idol. Well, they're wearing outrageous fucking clothes.
Justin Bieber has a job, though. Justin Bieber, like... He goes out skills. There and he makes it happen. He never says never.
Right.
He does it. This guy doesn't do shit. Bruno just hangs out.
Right, with his weird lobster tie. And
designed by Hitchcock, by the way.
Actually a really cool tie.
Hitchcock designed that tie himself.
I would wear that.
He put a lot of thought into his clothes and the way he orders food. Like, apparently Hitchcock wanted him to be, like, very interested in the food he's eating. He's very interested in consumption, so on the train he orders lamb chops and french fries and... chocolate ice cream.
Right, and the lamb chops were poorly done.
They're a little overdone, but good. Yeah.
But very... certainly captures the sort of rich boy-esque.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we're getting. I mean, it's obviously looking at upper crusty people, which a lot of detective things do. But also, I just don't get Haynes' background all that much. I mean, he's in with the senator's daughter... I don't know what his ex-wife's deal is. He's a hotshot amateur tennis player. Yeah, that's it. So maybe it doesn't really clarify. Did he come from a mediocre background?
It seems like he came from like a.
I mean, he plays tennis, background. So it's gotta be at least middle class.
Right, that's my assumption. Is middle class, but he's dealing with the upper class. Which, speaking of class, I just saw Us.
Oh, yeah?
Jordan Peele's movie. And, like, I didn't really like... Get Out, I thought, was a good movie, but didn't really care about it that much. But this movie was as good as Get Out should have been. It was really fucking good. And it had this really cool subtext about class struggle and how that all works. And
well, I mean, so did Get Out.
So did Get Out. This does, too, but it's a lot... It's better. Just more clever. And it's more subtle. And it's, like, just there's more layers to it. It's not just like, oh, there's other types of racism, too.
Get
it's
Out
like,
wasn't that subtle.
Like, and also, it's not just, like, racial and us. It's more about class. And there's elements in there about, like, inherited poverty and systemic racism. It's in there, but it's mainly focused on how classes work and how you can move up through the classes. And I think what the overall arching theme of what Us is, even though we're not really talking about it right now, is that when you are, let's say, you're African-American or you're in a minority, when you move up in a class, there's, like, a part of you that's, like, feels like it's a betrayal or something.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. That part I was a little fuzzier on, other than the obvious thing about people get kept down, but there are ways you can move up in classes, but there's different, you know, different psychological things that happen when you do that. It was just overall really creepy, really good movie, and I dug it. And it was grim, and there were a lot of bunnies in it.
Ooh, I love to eat rabbits.
Rabbits are cool, but I've been having all these weird bunny-related coincidences lately. Like, the first thing that happened was my brother-in-law found a bunny in our backyard. I mean, and then at the same time, roughly the same day, my fiance's aunt found a bunny in her yard and kept it, and they both kept the bunnies, whatever. That didn't really seem like anything.
They kept the outdoor
rabbits. But then
rabbits.
I listened to an episode of Strange Familiars, and they had this thing about the bunny man, about how bunnies can be this weird, like, archetype, and they can mean different things. And then I was watching a show about UFOs, and they were talking about how, like, they can transform. I think it was the Dan Aykroyd episode of the last podcast, Side Stories. And he was talking about how, like, they can change form. He's like, they could change into a bunny rabbit. And then walk.
Why are you wearing that stupid human suit?
Right, and then walk into your living room, and you wouldn't know the difference. And then immediately after I watched, listened to that episode, that's when I watched Us, and there were all these rabbits. I was like, there's fucking rabbits everywhere, man.
What the fuck?
I wish there were fucking rabbits out here eating my hostas plants so I could eat them.
What?
How'd they catch these rabbits?
They were like alone. They're baby rabbits alone in the yard. Like if it was me, I would have just left it. I would have assumed that the parent rabbit would have come at some point. But like, I don't know. My brother-in-law gets us like overzealous, okay. And he's like, "I'm gonna go get this rabbit and save it." And then he like put it in a box and with the food and stuff. And then then we ended up letting it go anyway. Like roughly the same thing happened with the ant. Except she kept it for much longer. In fact, it died the other day. But it's just this series of bunny things. I'm starting to think. Now, bunnies and Christ and Easter and stuff. What is with bunnies? What is the archetype? What's happening in society with bunnies? Why are we a little...
They're becoming more and more popular as pets.
That's true.
Because they're low maintenance and they're furry.
Jordan Peele says he chose bunnies for us because the thing is that the people who live underground, the underground dwellers, they eat bunnies. Live bunnies. He said the reason he chose them is because he's terrified of rabbits because their ears look like scissors and... their eyes are menacing, which I never really thought that, but I guess I could see that. And there's also a theme of doubles, like it's 11-11 keeps coming up in the movie, and I thought about it. If you get two bunnies next to each other, the ears will look like 11-11.
Crisscross.
We swap bunnies.
It's like if one bunny was rubbing on the other one, you know, they would make scissors. They would make scissor ears.
Bunny scissors, yeah. That's what's up.
Scissor me, bunny.
Scissor me.
Timbers. You know, they clip dog ears. Why don't they clip bunny ears? That's interesting. It's the way the bunny's supposed to have the ears. That's what makes them a bunny. Yeah. Otherwise, they're a groundhog, pretty much.
Yeah. Essentially.
Darn rodents. Marmots. Are they a rodent or a marmot? Is there a difference?
What's a marmot?
I'm not sure. I think, like, the bigger rodents are considered marmots, like groundhogs, gophers.
Somebody needs to look up the word marmot.
Already marmot. On it, bro.
That's marmot.
Marmot.
Marmot. M-A-R-M-O-T. Marmot.
Or marmot. Marmot.
Marmont?
Marmont.
Marmont.
Marmont Potion Castle.
Yeah.
Marmot. Large squirrels.
That can't be what it says. Marmot. A large squirrel. That's it?
It's like a large anything breed that of squirrel?
Looks like a large squirrel, the marmot.
That's actually, literally, if you look this up, marmots are large squirrels in the genus Marmota with 15 species.
So they're like in the same family as squirrels. So squirrels are not rodents then.
Genus.
Right.
But they
no,
are.
No.
Rodentia, yeah. That's like a kingdom.
You can have, marmots could be a subclass.
No, squirrels are not included
Quebec
in them.
On class. Yeah.
Squirrels are not rodents.
Well, like sort of like... Rectangles and squares.
Right. Like, not every... Every rectangle is a...
A parallelogram.
No. Yeah, so square... Okay, every square is a rectangle.
You're far.
Every square is a rectangle. Thank you. There we go.
And he was drifting from the mic.
Every square is a rectangle.
Every square is a rectangle.
Right.
That's true.
So
but
every...
Not every marmot is a square.
Right.
So every marmot's a rodent, but not every, if this is how this works, but not every rodent is a marmot.
Right.
Unless the family Sciuridae includes them. Okay, squirrels and
I don't know.
Fucking interested now.
So Sciuridae does include the mostly herbivorous.
Okay, well what is the exact definition of a rodent?
Small squirrel.
Look up rodent. Just look up rodent.
Okay, rodent.
We're gonna get to the bottom.
Class order Rodentia.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. What is the marmot thing?
It is of order Rodentia. They are technically rodents. All
right. Yeah. So it's not a kingdom. It's an order. All right.
Yeah.
I was close.
It's not a
kingdom, order.
Kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species.
Yeah, whatever.
It's like a rap song.
I forgot the phylum.
Can't forget about the phylum. You can't forget about the spinal cord, dude. Does it have a spinal cord? Then it's in the Chordata phylum.
Dope.
Mm-hmm.
Or dope.
Class dope. Mammalia.
Word.
Words.
Words, son. Check it out. Check it out. Funk show.
Completely.
Check it out
completely
now.
Arbitrary.
Arbitraria.
Arbitraria.
Like, Animalia arbitraria linguistica.
That's what you call it. You put a bunch of animals in one cage. You call it, this is my arbitrarium.
There's a drawer over there of sufficient randomness.
An arbitrarium.
Yeah.
Drawer of sufficient randomness.
That's, making it sufficient feels...
I've got several drawers. I call one of them the drawer of excessive randomness.
I have a drawer of insufficient randomness.
Insufficient randomness. This is too uniform.
I need more shit.
I'll throw some bits of string in here. Yes.
I'm sure like these paper clips will be useful sometime.
I like where this podcast went.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, you read Hardboiled Wonderland, right? Mm-hmm. What were the things that, like, there were little things that could be paper clips or any other small item that were actually, like, sort of metaphysical items, but I forget
I think
what
I saw that book.
What's that?
I have that book.
You should read it. If you haven't read it, it's very weird and metaphysical.
I got, like, a third of the way through it.
I love it. It's great.
For some reason.
But they were called something funny like widgets, but not that. Or, this is going to kill me now. Anyway, you continue.
Shit.
I'm just going to look that up for personal reasons.
Yeah, where were we? All right, so Bruno.
Bruno.
Ended up sending Guy a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then Guy called him again and said, I'm going to come and kill your father tonight. And Bruno was just like,
Bruno's too smart
dope.
For that.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Sick, bro. Thank you.
And so Guy shows up. He sneaks in. He sent him a key, too. So he uses the key to get in. And, you know, he sees the dog. And the dog is just like...
Very cute.
Yo, what up? I don't know why he didn't pet him.
He did pet
him. That's what really pissed me off about
it. He did pet him.
He didn't pet him.
Yeah, as he walks by, because first he's like, oh, shit. And then the dog starts to lick his hand, and he's like... And he, like, petted him and walked by. He totally petted him.
He didn't give the dog enough attention.
He petted him, though.
He
He's an animal abuser.
Like, he didn't, like,
that's what's wrong
him.
With
he
Guy.
He didn't stroke him, but he patted him a couple of times and then walked away.
A couple pats of recognition.
I'll give you that. Which is not enough attention for that dog.
It's a guard dog.
And so, Guy goes to Bruno's father's room.
Dog
on the map that Bruno had provided him. He's just like, yo, your son's fucked up. And Bruno's there. He's like, hey.
So obvious.
Yeah. I knew you weren't going to kill my dad, and he's out of town. Which is kind of weird. Like, he was like, I was going to tell you, but.
Well, it seems like with all this.
What do you mean? Bruno knew. Bruno knew that he was going to tell his dad that.
Well, yeah. So
it was obvious.
I mean,
like
Bruno
suddenly...
was just like, yeah, I mean, I was. My father's out of town. I was going to tell you, but then I was just like,
right, and
I'm
the light—the light was off first. And
well,
then
no,
he turned the light
Bruno
on.
Said that he's like, because he's basically said that he knew that he wasn't going to kill his dad, because he's like he was explaining how Bruno's explaining how Guy like had a sudden change of heart, and it, he basically alluded to that he's like, yeah, that was kind of weird.
So was it Bruno's? So Bruno he wasn't aware all along that he would fuck it up. He wanted
Guy randomly, he was like suddenly like, okay, I'm going to do it.